All right, so let's just do a real quick review of what we learned last week. Right, last week we had what was the question that we would ask a pro-choice person in the event that they said, okay. So last week we talked about questions to ask somebody who was pro-choice or pro-abortion. What was the question that we would ask somebody if they were coming at our position and attacking our position? What is the unborn? Right? That's the most crucial question we can ask them, because if they say, I don't know, what's our next response? Then you can't kill it. If you don't know what the unborn is, and it's a human being, which we know scientifically that it is, it's a person. So when you say you don't know, that means you can't kill it. So what, and how, and what's the name of the test that we would use to evaluate their responses? SLED. Who wants to tell me what SLED stands for?
Size.
Size.
Level of development.
Yes.
Environment.
Degree?
Degree.
Degree of dependency. Right? So the four things that differentiate the born from the unborn is size, level of development, environment, where it is, and D, degree of dependency. So this week what I want to do is go over 10 common objections to the pro-life position to show you that there are answers for our position. Now, I don't necessarily think you're going to be able to memorize these answers, but it's good to hear them, good to let them sink in. So here's a pretty common one. No one knows when life begins. How do you think you might respond to that? Yes. Right, we do know when life begins. Our response would look like this. If you don't know, you can't kill it. Right? If they say, well, we ask them, well, when does life begin? And they say, I don't know. Again, the proper response is, well, then you can't kill it. If you don't know what it is, and there's a potential for it to be a person, which we believe it is, well, then you can't kill it. All right? So we actually do know when life begins. But when they say they don't know, it actually turns into an argument for the pro-life view, because if you don't know, what should you err on? The side of life. If you don't know, you don't err on the side of death. Kill it, and then maybe we'll find out. Yes?
I think deep down that they do know. They just want to reject
because they're confused and a reason to do what they are wanting to do. Absolutely. They're killing the baby for the sake of convenience or some other bogus reason. It's not a justified taking of a life. Think about if you were a hunter, okay, and you and a group of your buddies went upstate hunting, and everybody takes their positions, and you're sitting up in your tree stand, and all of a sudden you hear a rustling in the bushes, but you can't see what it is. Do you just shoot? Who? He said yes. If you hear the bushes rustling and you see some leaves moving, you have to maybe wait and see if you see antlers, a tail, four legs. Otherwise, it could be your buddy. Maybe he dropped something. He fell in the bush. He's looking for something. You don't shoot first and ask questions later. You have to know what it is before you shoot. Otherwise, you can kill a human being. Okay? So a position that says we don't know when life begins and therefore we can abort it is morally bankrupt. That is not a moral position. Second, we do know when life begins. Okay? When something, if it was dead in the womb, it does not grow. It does not metabolize or react to stimuli. Those are three things that we know scientifically points to something being alive. So, during the process of fertilization, a sperm unites with a living egg to produce a zygote. There is never a period of non-life for that zygote. It begins alive and continues to live throughout its stages of development. And that's all they are. They're just stages of development of a human being. Okay? Biology textbooks recognize what I just told you, that the three criteria for life are growth, which means reproduction of the cells, metabolism, and reaction to stimuli. Those are present in the unborn from the moment of conception. In other words, dead things do not grow, metabolize, or react to stimuli. So this is alive. Now, there was a United States Judiciary Committee, and they invited a bunch of experts to testify on the question of when does life begin. And all of the doctors agreed that life begins at the moment of conception. In fact, this one guy in the medical school says the beginning of a single human life is, from a biological point of view, a simple and straightforward matter. The beginning is conception. No. Scientifically, it's a life the moment it's a zygote, the moment the egg is fertilized. So when somebody says, we don't know when life begins, well, if you don't know, you can't kill it. And fortunately for us, scientifically, we do know when life begins. Life begins at the moment of conception, yes. Exactly. I mean, there's a bunch of memes on Facebook that says if a scientist found a cell on Mars, they would immediately proclaim there's life on Mars, but there's cells in the womb, but we don't proclaim that as life. It's the suppression of truth and unrighteousness. That's the bottom line. They're looking to justify what they do, what they're doing, based on personal and selfish matters. Okay, so no one knows when life begins is not true. We do know when life begins. Another objection that we can look at is the unborn is a potential human being. Right? How would somebody go about answering that objection? Anybody got any ideas? Well, it's just a potential human being.
Well, if you wanted to go at it from a perspective of putting the question back on them, asking how they know this, but, I mean, getting back to the scientists, right, we already know that once that the egg penetrates, sperm penetrates the egg, and then you have the zygote, you already have the 26 and 22 chromosomes, that's a complete human being.
Exactly. Exactly. I think the response would be wrong. At the moment of conception, the zygote has the necessary and distinct DNA that qualifies it as a human being already. Okay. Once that zygote is in existence, it has 26 X chromosomes, another 26 X chromosomes, or 26 and XY chromosomes. It's a combination of those two. And the DNA that is in that zygote is this very same DNA that they were born with. It's the very same DNA that they're going to die with. No DNA ever gets added or subtracted from that person. Yes.
And it's unique.
That DNA is different than the mother's DNA, and it's different than the father's DNA, which qualifies it as a separate, distinct entity. If you forget that, and somebody says, well, it's a potential human being, the best thing you can do when you're talking to someone else is ask them a question. Make them explain to you their worldview. When they say, well, it's a potential human being, just say, well, what do you mean by human being? Now, yeah. Right. Yes, we can move into that also, of course. What is it? Its mother was a human being. Its father was a human being. Therefore, it's a canine, feline, bovine, no, after its kind, it's a human being. And the doctor's going in there to kill it, correct? Well, if he's killing it, what does it mean? It's alive. So its mother was a human being, its father's a human being, therefore it's a human being, and you're trying to kill it, which means that it's alive. It's a live human being in the mother's womb, yes.
Like commonality with the noble eights and stuff and everything. carbon sets anything else, like bananas, plants, everything in the atmosphere, like everything that draws breath and does these sort of things on its life that gives off carbon emissions, does that make it not alive?
Exactly. Again, it's suppressing of the truth. So, humans always give birth to other humans. And just ask them, do you have any other counterexamples to this? Do you have an example scientifically where maybe a mother and a father, a human mother and a human father, gave birth to something else? You've never observed that. Oh, stop. I'll cover the microphone for that one. Yeah, Marie. He starts off his series with Cosmos saying, the cosmos is all that is and ever was and ever will be. Don't you realize that has a religious tone to it? Doesn't that sound like some of the creeds that we is and ever was and ever will be? Your worldview will boil down to this. Either in the beginning God or in the beginning the particles. That's it. If you start off with in the beginning of the particles, you are worth no more than a bug, a bird, a bonsai tree, or bedrock. You're no difference. No different than that, except for the value that someone else puts on you. And when you put the value of a human being in the hands of another human being, you're asking for trouble. It's happened in the past with disastrous results. Every human being in our worldview is created in the image of God and has inherent worth and value. Yes. Well, it's political activists that are making that claim, but scientists and doctors say it differently. Doctors agree that it's a life at the moment of conception. Okay, but they mask it with the language of it's a woman's right to choose. And we're going to get to that objection in a minute. I like the way Scott Klusendorf puts it. He says, he sums it up this way. You didn't come from an embryo. You once were an embryo. At no point in your prenatal development did you undergo a substantial change or change of nature. You began as a human being and will remain so until death. Sure, you lacked maturity at that early stage of your life, as does an infant and a toddler, but you were human nonetheless. The zygote is a human being, okay, just at a different stage of development than a grown human being. Okay? So that's those two objections. The next one is the one that we were talking about. A woman has the right to do what she wants with her own body. How many people believe that's true? You believe that's true? She has the right to do what she wants with her own body? Okay. Mediocre. All right. Good. Say that again. That's wrong. Men or women cannot do whatever they want with their bodies. In other words, we have laws. We have driving while intoxicated laws, drug laws. We have laws that prevent people from doing something to their body that may harm someone else. Yes. That's a great point, right? We are not our own. We were bought with a price. So God is our creator. We don't have the right to do whatever we want with our body, although we do make bad choices with our bodies. But in answer to this objection, no, they don't have the right to do what they want with their body. In fact, we have laws. Laws always restrict what we can do with our bodies when we're doing things that harm another individual. Gun laws, driving laws, right? We're not allowed to run an intersection, pass a stop sign or a red light because we may injure someone else. Okay? And the way we would look at this is laws, again, always restrict what we can do to our bodies when they harm someone else. This is exactly what is happening in the case of abortion, where the mother's decision not only brings harm to her unborn, but brings life, the life of her unborn, to an end. So in the case of abortion, she's not hurting her body, she's hurting the body of the child within her. So when somebody says, well, when a woman says, it's my body, it's my choice, I can have an abortion, my answer to them is, no, you're killing a baby. She says, well, it's my body. I said, if it's your body, then you'd be dead. If it's your body, you'd be dead. You're killing the body within you. That, although it's inside of you, doesn't give you the right to kill it. All right? Again, it begs the question, laws always restrict what we can do to our bodies. And third, the objection begs the question in assuming that there is only one body involved. All right? There's two bodies, the woman's body and the baby's body. It should be obvious that there are two, the mother's and the unborn. While the mother's body is certainly involved, it's not the mother's body that's being aborted. The woman survives the abortion when the unborn doesn't. Yeah.
There's one argument that comes up, and that's if the fetus will kill the mother.
Mm-hmm.
And the argument from the perspective of what is right and what is wrong for aborting that fetus is usually that if the mother dies and the fetus dies, then it's a matter of, like, if the egg is implanted in
mm-hmm.
And no matter what, if that egg is left there, the mother's going to die, and the fetus is going to die as well. That argument has come up.
Oh, absolutely. And we're going to get to something similar to that in the event of rape. But at that point, the doctor's job is to try to preserve both lives.
Exactly.
Okay? In the unfortunate situation where one is going to die and the other isn't, no matter what he does, well, then one is going to die and the other won't, no matter what he does. So what would be the prudent thing to do? Keep the mother alive so that she can bring forth new life. I mean, it's that's not a situation that's very common at all. Yes. Right. Exactly. Again, we have to go back and ask the person. The question we have to drill into our own minds, get it ingrained in our memory, is what is the unborn? What is it? If it's a clump of cells, like you just said, what part of your body are you losing? It's no different than cutting off a finger or a tumor. All right? But if it's a person, well, then you do not have the right to do with it whatever you want. What is the unborn? Right.
That's really what it comes down to. How is this going to interfere with my life?
Exactly. They're sacrificing their baby on the altar of convenience and calling it choice. The word choice is a distortion of what it actually is. I mean, in Belgium, you can kill a baby after it's out of the womb. At what point do we determine that, no, we can't kill it? And what's happening now, they're looking at euthanasia in the sense of killing older people who are not contributing to society. At what do you have to contribute to society in order to be kept alive? They're starting to go down that road, and that's going to bring disastrous results. Anytime the value of a human being is placed in another human being's hands, you're going to have disastrous results. Okay? Yeah. Hold on.
Would it be a good thing?
You mean like that?
Well, I'm saying, would it be a good thing to remind them that if they were in an accident and that baby that you're carrying, embryo, was killed, the person who did it would be charged with murder, so how could you not do it?
I think it's 27 states that it's considered a double homicide, yes. You guys are looking at my notes. All right. So when somebody says, well, abortion's legal, you know, the decision with Roe v. Wade said, you know, you're allowed to terminate a pregnancy. They won't call it a baby. You're allowed to terminate a pregnancy while it's in the womb. Well, just because something's legal doesn't make it moral. Slavery was wrong, even though it was legal. You know, and you know the mantra, oh, don't like abortion, don't have one. And I look at them, I'm like, don't like slaves, don't own one. Don't like guns, don't buy one. Don't like murder, don't commit one. This is a ridiculous way of arguing, because all you have to do is take out the word abortion and put in another issue in its place. And then all of a sudden they're going to be vehemently against you, and you just basically turn their argument back on themselves. Yeah. Ah, you want to use the Bible? Oh, come on. That's an old archaic book written by cavemen. What are you doing? You really believe that? That's what you're going to get. Thank you. You flip it around. Okay, this is a question of worldviews. Say, okay, what are you basing the way you live your life on? You know, when I did the debate with the atheist, she says, oh, she started ripping apart the Bible. I said, listen, you not liking the Bible doesn't disprove the existence of God. That just proves you don't like God. Okay, but why don't we do another debate? Why don't you bring me in your standard? Let me read it. Let me see what it's about. I'll compare it to my standard, and then we can have a debate. And that shut that down right quick, because she doesn't have a standard outside of her own intuition or conscience or whatever you want to call it. At the end of the debate, she says, you don't need a Bible. All you need to do is look inside your heart. And I said, what? The heart that beats on the operating table? Because all you believe is in what you can see, touch, feel, or weigh. They're naturalists. They're materialists. So if you can't hit it, it doesn't exist. So in saying that, her argument was self-defeating. She's saying, look at something immaterial inside you, your conscience. How does a conscience exist on a materialistic, atheistic worldview? But I digress. All right. This is what's called the is-ought fallacy. Just because abortion is allowed, it doesn't follow that it ought to be. Again, just because something is legal does not make it moral. As in the case of slavery, as in the case of guns, as in the case of murder, and just about every other moral issue that we have out there. Okay. Here's another good one. Abortion is a woman's issue. You men, stay out of it. Right? Too late for that. So, all right, gotta keep that out of there. All right. The first thing is, arguments don't have gender. People do. Because guess what? There's women who argue for the pro-life position. Same argument. Just it's instead of a male, it's a female. All right. So gender is absolutely irrelevant to whether the pro-life position or any argument is correct. It's an ad hominem fallacy. In other words, based on where your argument is coming from, it must be wrong. That's an attack on the person, not the argument. When people start attacking me and me as a person versus my argument, I go along with them. I said, listen, I'm wicked, I'm fat, I'm bold. All those things are true. Now why don't you deal with my argument? See if my argument's true. I agree with you. I'm everything that you said I am and worse. Now let's look at the merits of my argument. So, think about this. If men cannot speak on abortion, then we should overturn Roe v. Wade. Right? That was a case decided by 9 male Supreme Court justices. So yeah, let's get rid of that. They have no business in making these laws since they're men. All of a sudden, sometimes the light goes on when you're talking to somebody with regards to that. And while we're at it, we might as well get rid of all the male lawyers who work for Planned Parenthood and the ACLU on abortion-related issues because they're men. What is a man, though? Go ahead. Exactly. In every case, the baby is the victim of a crime it didn't commit. You know, the baby is the result of a crime, not the cause of it. And we're going to get to that objection in a minute or two. So another objection would be, you can't legislate morality. How would you respond to something like that? That's a good answer. Every law legislates a moral point of view. No matter what it is. Right? Laws against murder, stealing, littering, legislate the moral point of view that murder, stealing, and littering are wrong and should be prohibited or penalized by law. That's a moral position. They're putting forth that belief. Second, pro-life and pro-choice advocates are attempting to legislate moral beliefs. We believe that life is sacred. They believe it's expendable. Pro-life advocates want to legislate their belief that abortion should not be permitted because they argue that abortion takes the life of an innocent human being without proper justification. That's our view. Pro-abortion advocates want to legislate that their belief that the abortion should be permitted because it's fundamentally an issue of women's rights. The question is, whose belief is correct and whose belief should be legislated? Regardless, neither side is a morally legal or neutral position. This is a moral position. Pro-choice advocates have legislated their belief on 50 million babies since Roe v. Wade that's resulted in their deaths. So it's funny how they bring up something like this. You can't legislate morality, but then they're trying to push their view of morality on us. Now, I readily admit that we are trying to push our moral view on them, and that's okay. They're trying to push it on us. We're trying to push it on them. We have to tear down strongholds and everything that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. And how do we do that? Where do arguments exist? Somebody tell me. Where do arguments in your mind, right? How do we tear down a stronghold in someone's mind? And putting forth the truth. No. No. By proclaiming the truth and arguing based on God's word that this is a human being. Okay? That's how we tear down strongholds. Okay. Third, there's nothing more radical than legislating your morality on the weakest, most defenseless people in society. Unborn babies. Pro-choice. What's the baby's choice? Would the baby choose to live? I think every human being that comes out of the womb says, yeah, I'm glad I'm alive. Every person who was going to be aborted and the abortion failed comes out and says, thank God I'm alive. I would choose life. You don't get the privilege of making that choice for someone else. They have a choice too. Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That gets back to it's an argument of worldviews. It's a battle of worldviews. If you're in your worldview as an atheist, materialist, scientism, whatever you want to call it, if your value is based on what someone else says it is, it's going to result in disaster. However, in our worldview, every person is created in the image of God. You are an image bearer of God. Okay, you have inherent worth and value in God's eyes. You are His creation. And you cannot do to His creation what He tells you not to do to His creation. So, one point of view values all life. Another point of view decides what all life's value is. Yeah. Absolutely, it's ironic to see how the people who pride themselves on science jettison science when it doesn't comport with what they want. When their desire is such that I want to get rid of the child, we don't need science anymore. When it's their desire to decide what gender I am, we don't need science anymore. But then when we start talking about something, well, what about the science? What about the science? I'm like, yeah, science comports with my worldview. You reject it in certain cases because it doesn't follow the desires of your heart. God.
What I find rights and to do what they want to do, want to deny that very same thing to you and I, because we differ with their opinion. So they're hypocrites. Because you're saying it's about choice. Well, why don't I have a choice and a right to disagree with you? And they say, you don't.
Right.
So
it's the intolerance of tolerance. They claim intolerance, but they're the ones who are really intolerant. Go ahead, Pierre.
I think what America has to look at is pro-choice advocates have to look at the crisis that's happening now and China, who has a mandate of birth control because they want their people to succeed in society because of success ahead of everything. Now they're in a crisis where they have no childbirth. And they're China, particularly looking at that and saying, well, you want to dominate the world, but now we've got low childbirth. People start having babies. But they find there's a difficulty that that's happening in Japan as well.
There was this command that God gave us to be fruitful and multiply. You know, it has wide-ranging ramifications, but it's, you know, applicable to children, but to bring children into the world. They're a blessing from the Lord. When you look at the birth rate in America, I think it's 1.8. For every couple, there's 1.8 children being born. So that doesn't cause us to increase in numbers. That causes us to stay the same and maybe shrink. Whereas in the Muslim population, it's 3-point-something. So they're being fruitful and they're multiplying. And just by sheer numbers alone, they will overtake us. Yeah. Well, yeah, they put this forth as the solution to the consequence. So go have fun, do whatever you want to do, feel great. This is the solution to that. It's very easy to appeal to people's flesh. I mean, we're born wanting to please our flesh. That's why we have to stand up and proclaim the biblical gospel, that is sinful, that this is murder. And if the church doesn't stand up and do its job, we're going to see exactly what we're seeing in today's society. Everyone wakes up, turns on the news, and says, something's wrong with this world. Right? And the question is, well, what's wrong with this world? And the answer is, me and you. Right? We're what's wrong with this world. We're the ones who sin. And especially as the church, if we don't stand up and do our job and proclaim the gospel, okay, and do what Jesus told us to do, make disciples, correct disciples, well, then we're going to see what we're seeing now. Did you have a question? Thought?
Comment,
go ahead.
Well, you also keep in mind that mentality that arisen in the last years coincides perfectly with the evolution of the plant view. Where just animals will be absent. There is no formality in things. And, you know, while we might not have mandated, forced rape as China does, it's the stigma that you want 10 to more than 3 kids in an idiot. Mm-hmm. It's just, as soon as someone who presents that possibility as a young person, older people look down on it as like, wait until you're 30 to get married. Don't go see the world. So it's like that idea, even though we don't have a technical law against it.
What it reminds me of, and that's the voice of society. Putting forth your happiness above someone else's life, okay, and the biblical commands. In fact, when they were going to crucify Jesus or Barabbas, they were shouting Barabbas, and Scripture clearly says their voices prevailed. And their voices prevailed. What has to happen is we have to stand up and scream louder and louder, and based on God's word, okay, and let our voices prevail. We have to proclaim the truth regardless of what happens in the society around us. And then God will take that and do what he does with it. Yeah.
Just sort of back up what he's saying. Walk into a restaurant with five kids and tell you get the look. Amazement, what's wrong with you, the whole
Right. And what's that based on? That's based on a self-centered attitude. Like, why would you even think about trying to afford all five of these kids? Isn't this a monetary burden on you? What are you thinking? You could be so much happier without them, you know. Go ahead. Listen, everyone has a point of view and everyone is pushing it on you. Don't think that they're not. The way everyone lives their life is a commercial for their worldview. So when they come in and they look down at your nose, they're pushing their worldview on you. And it's about time that we get a biblical worldview deep down in our hearts and live and act that way. So let's move on. All right. The next objection is there's no consensus on the abortion issue. You know, some people are for it, some people are against it. Now what do we do? Well, absence of consensus does not mean absence of truth. Right? There is a true position, a right and wrong position on this. Just because they supposedly say there's no consensus on it doesn't mean that's one's right and the other's wrong. Not agreeing does not mean there isn't a morally correct position. There is a morally correct position, and the question that you want to ask the pro-choice advocate is what? What is it? What is the unborn? If it's a person, you can't kill it. That's the bottom line. So, women's rights, slavery, child labor, and a host of other issues have been argued, debated, and fought over. Right? By all walks of life, from people all over, of all levels of education and all facets of religion and belief. But those had morally correct and incorrect results. So this is no different. Just because they say there's no consensus doesn't mean that there's not a morally correct position. And if you are pro-choice, the law for Roe v. Wade discriminates based on size, development, environment, and degree of dependency. Again, we go back to the SLED test. S, size, L, level of development, E, environment, D, degree of dependency. Those are the four things that will differentiate someone who's born versus an unborn baby. Okay? So the law now discriminates against babies based on those four things. So them not having supposedly consensus doesn't mean that one, that their view is correct. And I like the way they put it. Since there's no consensus, I win. Since there's no consensus, we're just going to continue doing what we want to do. Well, imagine if that's the way you ended every argument. Right? Husbands and wives, well, this is what I believe, I win. Not going to make for a happy home. Go ahead. Here's a shameless plug for the conference that's coming up next Friday and Saturday. All right, you're going to learn about absolute truth and self-refuting statements. When somebody says there is no such thing as absolute truth, what's your question to them? Is that absolutely true? It's a self-defeating statement. The fact that they're saying it, they believe it, and go ahead. The sad part is that is common in colleges across this country and throughout the world. They make absolute statements and then claim there is no absolute truth. Right. There was a guy, in fact, I got a clip of it, and I use it in one of my presentations. There's a college basketball coach. He says, I've never made an absolute statement. I never have and never will. Three in a matter of 2 seconds. Three. And this goes right over people's mind because they hear them so many times, they're just accustomed to it. We have to think. We have to use God's word. We have to use logic that he's given us to think these things through, listen to people, and then confront them on their beliefs. Otherwise, we're going to get thwarted. Not thwarted, but attacked. All right, this is another good one. Stop dictating your beliefs. You don't like abortion, don't have one. Don't push your beliefs on me. Thank you. If dictating a belief is wrong, then one should be dictating that the belief that it's wrong to dictate. In other words, if I think that it's wrong, you shouldn't be dictating your beliefs on me. My question to them would be, well, then why are you dictating your beliefs on me? Again, everyone has a point of view and they're going to push it on you. You have to be ready for this. Listen for these self-defeating statements and turn it back around on them. So if it's wrong for you to dictate your beliefs, why are you dictating your beliefs on me? Self-refuting. And this falls victim to the subjectivist fallacy, treating objective truth, the life of an unborn, life or non-life, as if it were a subjective preference. Well, I don't like, I don't want to have the baby. It's just a fetus. This is subjective. Just because you don't like it or don't want it doesn't mean it's true. Again, if you don't like slavery, don't have one. Ironically, all 50 states restricted elective abortion. All 50 states, the states agreed abortion should be legal. Yet, 9 judicial judges dictated a belief that overturned the will of the people in Roe v. Wade. So the federal law supersedes the state law. We got to get rid of that. But we just have to get rid of the fact that people would even consider something like this. And the only way you get rid of something like this is through the proclamation of the gospel. Okay. No law is going to legislate. No human law is going to change someone's heart. Abortion should be permissible in the case of rape or incest. I'm going to go through this quick because we don't have much time. Rape or incest accounts for less than 1% of all abortions. Less. Much less. Probably less than a half of 1%. So here's what I like to ask somebody. Okay. And if you ever watch, anybody ever watch Ben Shapiro? Political activist? He does this all the time on college campuses. He says, okay, if I concede that it would be okay to abort a child because of rape, will you concede that the 99% of abortions that are not for rape are wrong? No. No. See, and all it is a red herring, right? All they want to do is throw up the hard case, get an emotional appeal to that, and let that direct the rest of their thoughts to emotionally get you to agree with their position. It should not be allowed for convenience. It's an appeal to emotion. In most cases, get this, in the event of a rape, there have been women who have decided to give birth to the child. And the child grows up to become an active member of society, contributing to society. So think about this. Do we punish a baby for a crime it didn't commit? What is the unborn? If it's a person and you're going to kill it, you're punishing it for a crime it didn't commit. So think about it. The baby gets the death penalty, but the man who raped the woman gets 5 years in jail and then gets freed. Seems to be unjust. Seems to be an imbalance in the way it's done. The violence of abortion doesn't solve the violence of rape. Two wrongs don't make a right. We don't, because a woman's raped and gets pregnant, kill the baby in addition to the crime of rape. Why should the unborn be killed because its father was a rapist? Doesn't make sense. And the last one, we're getting a little short on time. I'm personally opposed to abortion, but I think women should be able to choose. Right? Exactly. This is a politician, you know, trying to straddle the fence here. So the question is, why do you personally oppose abortion? And you know what the funny thing is most of them say? Oh, we think abortion takes the life of a baby. So you think abortion kills a human baby and you believe women should have the right to do that. And usually the politician will say, well, it doesn't sound so nice when you say it. I said, it doesn't sound so nice when I say it because it's not so nice. You're taking the life of an innocent baby without proper justification. That's murder. You can't do that. So, again, you can substitute. I'm personally opposed to slavery, but I think slave owners should be able to choose. Right? Again, take out whatever argument it is they have and put a different issue in its place and flip it back around on them. I'm personally opposed to rape, but I think rapists should be able to choose. This is ridiculousness. It all comes down to what is it? What is the unborn? And if you don't know, you can't kill it. Now, we just have to get these things familiar to us so that when we're out talking with people and somebody brings it up, we can't be silent. Who's going to speak for the unborn? We have a responsibility as Christians, knowing that that child is created in the image of God. You know, unless we do hold to evolution and only the strong survive. I'm not with that. I believe that God placed us here in this world for a reason, to take dominion. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, we would have to explore that a little bit more and try to change the laws with regards to that, too. If they're agreeing that they raped the woman, they should be put in jail forever. How's that? Maybe we should change that law, too. Anyway, yeah. Anyway, there's a bunch of resources online. Pro-life training, Scott Klusendorf does a tremendous job. He's done debates. He's got online training that you can use. Students for Life, JFA Web, and str.org. These are all places that you can go to if you want information on the pro-life arguments. So with that, that ends our session. Jerry's going to wrap it up next week with a summation of everything we did. Yeah?
One question that you didn't address.
Yeah.
You'll get this.
Yeah.
Hopefully they do. What about the cowbell argument?
The cowbell argument. That's a new one recently. When Jeff Durbin, he stands up in front of an abortion mill in Arizona every week, and he proclaims the gospel, and he's trying to persuade people from going in and killing their babies. And a woman who's for pro-choice stands outside with a cowbell and just keeps trying to drown out his argument.
And that's the strength of your argument.
And her argument is basically, let's drown out their argument with a cowbell, because my argument doesn't make sense. I can't give proper reasons why this isn't a person, why this isn't a baby, and why we should kill it. Right? So let's close in prayer. Father in heaven, I thank you so much that you've impressed your truth upon our minds and our hearts. You've given us clear biblical evidence that the unborn is a baby, a person created in your image. Father, I pray that these truths would resonate deep within our hearts to the point where we would open our mouth, take a stand for the unborn, proclaim your truth, and let your kingdom come. It's in Jesus' name we pray.